So the big question is this. How do entrepreneurial salespeople like us, who have traditionally sold alone and used gut and intuition to hit their number, take their innate talents and begin selling using science, technology, and the secrets of thousands who have done it before to crush their quota and change the world? That is the question, and this podcast provides the answer. Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's podcast. Today, we're going to do something a little different. I just had an awesome session with Dave Elkington, CEO of InsideSales.com. We were talking about top trends for 2019. I've dove into a couple of those on the last episodes, but I wanted to get Dave's perspective on what he felt like was coming down in 2019. So this is a little show that Dave and I did, and I think you'll be interested to hear some of his feedback as we dive into what are the things when it comes to 2019 that you must know to be successful. Why don't we jump in? Dave, why don't you start on your mind when you think of 2019, what's something that really jumps out as, you know, something we're going to be facing probably whether people like it or not?
Yeah. So one thing before I actually get into that, let me tell you what I think is driving a lot of change in the market. And I think it's pervasive. And there's three things. Number one,
yep.
We're seeing data, the hype of AI and the hype of data actually come to fruition. So we're actually seeing real results, applications that aren't just hype, they aren't just theory, driving impact within organizations. So data seems to be, big data, AI, whatever term you want to put to that, that seems to be driving a lot of interest. Number two, this generational shift. So I would call it pre-Gen Xers, Gen Ys, millennials, Gen Zs. That generational shift is driving a massive shift in the way people buy and in the way people sell. And then the third one is the consumerization of the enterprise, where the consumer space has fundamentally changed the way we engage. I mean, think about how we buy on Amazon or how we buy Netflix and things like that. How we consume technology and how we live. The enterprise space is lagging, right? Yeah. And so I think we just began to see a lot of this last year, and I think we're going to see way more this coming year, 2019, around the way we buy, the way we engage at the enterprise level. I think is going to become more like the consumer experience. So those are the three things I think are driving most of the 50 that we've listed here.
Yeah, interesting. So you've got AI, you've got this consumerization. Can we dive into a couple of these? Talk a little bit about them.
Well, the first thing actually I'd love to hit is we're seeing this concept of a digital sales transformation changing the way everybody is selling. And what seems to be happening is it's a trend we've seen in other industries. Like we saw it in marketing in the early mid 2000s. We saw it in retail, obviously, as the transition to e-com in the late 90s. Well, it's happening. This transformation, this forced adoption of technology is changing completely the way we engage and the way we sell. And we're seeing it in companies like CenturyLink. So that's one of our partners. They're basically reinventing the way they sell. T-Mobile, reinventing the way they sell. Microsoft, reinventing the way they sell. So this concept of a digital sales transformation seems to be pervasive. Now, the smaller businesses, so those of you who work, at a company that call it is, 10 employees or 100 employees or 200 employees, it feels like you guys are way ahead of the market. It feels like this might be old news for you. This may have happened 3 years or 5 years ago, but it's now really happening in a large enterprise. So that's, what do you see, Gabe?
Yeah, I think when it comes to this concept of digital sales transformation, I think, Charlie, you made an interesting point here. Maybe you could hit on that, but this omni-channel experience, right, where a lot of people were talking about, look, we know we've got to meet the customer where they are.
Yeah.
But now we're not just seeing the use of email and phone specifically kind of in the prospecting realm. We're seeing, I need to meet people. Video is popped up, right? We've got texting. We've got all these different ways we can interact with customers. And if you're not thinking strategically about that, you're probably missing out on some very valuable interactions with your customer.
Well, and I see Dennis also just made a comment where 5G is completely disrupting the office space, right?
Like, yeah.
A lot of what's happening in the enterprise isn't sitting in a corporate office. It could be sitting on a beach. It could be sitting in their home office. It could be sitting, you know, I mean, really anywhere that the people are at, both buy, on the buy side and on the selling side. Who was it that just mentioned omnichannel? One thing,
Charlie mentioned.
So Charlie, it's a really good point. One thing we're seeing is that the buyer journey is not like the way sales is happening. When we talk about a digital sales transformation, one of the topics that that you know I think we put in our list of 50 is this thing about what do we call it here? I'm looking at my notes. What is it? It's a digital community. We're seeing communities that aren't the way they used to be. So an example is, think about, you know, 50 years ago, even 10 years ago, we were all going to trade shows. We were all meeting at the bar afterwards.
Right.
A lot of physical stuff. But now you've got Google Hangout groups. You're like this. Like, this is an example of a digital community where we're coming together, we're learning together, and we're giving feedback. And so I think this concept of sales is this, the way we get prospects, the way we develop relationships is changing. Now, again, back to what Charlie said, the what we're finding is it's about eight, there are eight separate ways prospects like to engage. And I'm sure we'd miss. So as we miss, let us know. But phone, the old school phone, yeah, is still real. Voicemail is still real. But email has made a resurgence, right, with the technologies that allow you to track the way people engage with your email. But social is now more a real thing. It's not just a hype word.
Yeah.
In fact, I'll give an example. One of our customers today just gave us permission to do a case study. We did a share on their results, and it's an entire, we've had, you know, 8,000 views of this thing, and there's like a real conversation around it. So that's a way social didn't exist even 5 years ago, even a year ago. Video with companies like Vidyard,
yeah,
and video. OneMob, things like that. SMS, online chat. So, you know, we use a sales chat, but this is a real story. I'm going to tell you guys real numbers, and you're not going to believe me, but I'm going to tell you anyway. We deployed a chatbot on our website to engage people, to set appointments to see, you know, demos of our product. And it circumvents our SDR organization. And so basically, they can engage and set up a demo and schedule an appointment on our salespeople's calendars live without ever talking to a person.
Yeah.
And it now generates for our corporate business, you know, more, not the large enterprise, but the corporate business, it actually sources well over 50% of the appointments that our salespeople use to engage with people interested in our technology. Not even, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, this thing didn't exist.
Right.
So chat's a big one. And then direct mailer.
It's back, it's right? Coming,
it's
right?
Back.
Totally coming.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
What are some, just of the 50, what are some that you like?
Yeah, I mean, I like this conversation around different communication methods, because I do feel like we're starting to see where the customer, again, they may respond more to this type of communication method or that type of communication method.
Yep, yep.
So I do feel like if you're not thinking about all the different ways you can interact with your customer, you're going to definitely miss out. In addition to that, this data piece, and this has kind of been your specialty, you mentioned it at first, where customers start to think about using data in just a whole different avenue, right? Whereas before, we've been known, and we've got companies like a Salesforce.com who says, you could, the power of your data becomes extremely important, but you've kind of been pushing and saying, guys, your data plus integrating that with other people's data can make your world so much smarter, as the B2C world is kind of found, right?
Yeah. So my favorite example, and everybody here on the podcast knows this, like the Google Waze example.
Yeah.
So think about what Google Waze does versus, say, Apple Maps or NavTech or MapQuest or any of those kind of things. So I love it. When I'm using Waze, it's not just using my data and the map data. It's actually looking at all the Wazers. So if I'm going up to the airport, it's going to show me the 500 Wazers that are behind me, that are in front of me, that are aside from me. And it's going to let me know, you know, using this concept that is being called collective intelligence, which is using the data, not just of my data, but it's using my data and it's comparing it to all of the other people in my network. But it's going to tell me, hey, is there a speed trap ahead?
Right.
Is there construction? Just stuff like that. And so we're seeing this concept emerge into the enterprise space. So like if your sellers do this already, your best sellers, if I'm trying to sell into Cisco, the experienced veteran sellers, they're going to call their buddy who just sold to Cisco and say, hey, you know, who did you sell to? Who's the buyer? Who's got budget? Who are the, you know, IT detractors?
Yeah.
But now there's technology that's actually letting us do this kind of stuff.
So yeah,
data's changing things.
I think that's going to be huge. And I know that's one you've pushed. And then the dovetail on top of that, and I think that's maybe even probably a question I should have asked before, you pitched this big concept of the cloud data wars, where the fundamental piece is data and collective intelligence and using your data and other people's data. But can you kind of put this picture together? Because I don't think we've even gotten to we've started this cloud data wars.
It's like pre-infancy.
But can you talk a little bit about it? Because I think that dovetails into the idea of collective intelligence. But what are we starting to see from an industry standpoint in that frame of mind?
First of all, one thing, the question for people on this podcast, like, who cares? Like, why do you care what companies are doing with data? And the question is then, what can you do about it? Like, personally, what value do you gain? How do you sell better? And the answer is what I believe. There's a new economy that's emerging, and it's called a consent economy.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is our data is ultimately more valuable than the software we buy. It's ultimately more valuable than almost anything else in terms of, you know, what this economy is driving. So you've heard the expression, and I use it a lot. I say, look, I think data is the new oil. Like, money, the real wealth in the future is going to be made from data. It used to be from oil. It used to be from land. It used to be from energy.
Right.
And today it's going, like, I think moving forward, it's going to be data. So there's this concept that we wrote an article called The Cloud Data Wars. And what that basically highlighted is all the big companies are buying up any data assets. And so if you go back even 5 years ago, there's IBM bought the Weather Channel, and everybody scratched their head. They're what's this for?
Right.
What IBM bought was a data asset.
Yeah,
now it's interesting. The question people are like, well, what do you do with that? Well, they immediately begin to license that data to everybody. Salesforce.com has a partnership with IBM licensing that data.
Yes.
It's a real revenue stream. Okay. So then move forward. Microsoft comes along, and there's this bidding war on LinkedIn. LinkedIn's acquired for $26 billion.
Yeah.
And the stock price at Microsoft goes up.
Right.
Like, and why? They actually measure this. In fact, we haven't shared this with anybody. Microsoft measured the value of that acquisition on a per profile basis. It wasn't revenue. It wasn't a revenue multiple.
Oh, interesting.
But, interesting. So they looked at it, but they're actually measuring on a per contact basis. And so there were a lot of, and it kind of feels like the old .com where, hey, you know, is there value on a per view basis? But it's not. So venture companies are now investing based off of the type and quantity of data. So data is a real thing. And there's been this flurry of acquisitions. Yeah. Salesforce has been acquiring companies that are all the way from the plumbing to kind of the core data asset themselves. Oracle is all over this. SAP just bought Qualtrics for, what is it, $6 billion?
$8 billion. Yep.
And it was purely, it was a data play. So the question is, then what does it matter to you? Well, your data is highly valuable. If you're giving your data to any company, make sure you're getting value back. So know what when you sign a contract with a vendor, make sure, this is Mandy just said, Disney owns ESPN. That is a data play. And so make sure you're getting value. There's always an exchange. So, I mean, GDPR is trying to put controls around this in Europe, which is the data privacy laws of the way technology.
And you've got a couple of questions. Don mentioned on here, you know, how do you see GDPR playing a role in this going forward? Are we going to see more problems if data is the new oil and we put limits on kind of some of the data protection rights and privacy rights? That's got to affect that.
Well, it's going to slow down, you know, this concept of just pure free capitalism. But I'm a capitalist, obviously. I start something like this, but at the same time, I kind of care about my privacy. And so, unlike some people, I'm very, very aware of what companies have access to and what they do with this data. So it sounds crazy. I think GDPR is not a bad thing. And I think it's going to help, manage this rush into the way we're leveraging data to help, companies create value. Now, on the flip side of that, it's creating personalization. So that's one of the other trends. I really believe we're going to see this mass personalization, less about just raw quantity in the selling process.
Yep.
So this smile and dial thing, I think is going away if it's not, you know, dead. There's a couple of industries that are still hanging on to it, but it's about quantity with quality and with personalization. I want to be sold something that I'm interested in a way that I want to be engaged with. Like there's just different. Yeah. And so GDPR, I think, is going to enforce that. But this promise of data allows us to engage in a way that's highly personalized to us. So you guys have heard account-based selling is a trend right now. I think it's going to get bigger. It's not going to get smaller.
Yeah, yeah. Do you feel like, we hit kind of the data piece. I wanted to the personalization just a minute, but you've obviously been a big proponent of artificial intelligence. How do you see artificial intelligence continuing to play? I mean, it's a buzzword. Everybody knows it. And data is a big part of artificial intelligence. But how do you see artificial intelligence kind of rolling out? One of the things you and I were debating is I've seen a lot of these technology maps out there, right? And companies are, what they'll do is they'll actually take artificial intelligence and they'll put it in its own category. Like, here are companies doing AI or predictive analytics. Whereas when I saw that, I was like, that's not the way people are going to see this going forward. You're definitely going to see AI, but it will infiltrate every single product that we have. So whether it's your coaching tool, whether it's your lead scoring tool, your engagement tool, your forecasting tool, your et cetera, no longer will be there be this category of these are the few people who are doing AI. No, you don't see it. Everybody has AI, so it'll be in every single one of those categories. Well,
and it's broader than I think we realize. Saying AI is an industry is naive. And let's talk briefly about what AI is. AI has been around for 60 years, maybe longer. The history of this thing, and it's fascinating, because when I went to get the master's in machine learning and AI, I was naive and I thought I would go like invent the Higgs boson of AI algorithms.
Right? I don't know what that is, but it sounds cool.
It's super cool. Basically, I thought I was going to unlock a human brain with a brand new algorithm.
Yeah.
And here's what I learned. In 1958 or 59, Arthur Samuel at IBM, and Arthur Samuel is arguably the grandfather of AI, was using expert systems and decision tree algorithms, which are basically the same kind of algorithms we're using today to automate a checkers game. Like an AI checkers game. A year later, Stanford Labs was using neural nets, which is, I mean, it's a trend. Like you'll hear that term, and people are using that same algorithm today. And they were using neural nets to filter echo and jitter out of phone conversations. So this is like 60 years ago. So what's changed? It's data.
So now, it does go back to
data. It's all back to data. Now, back to your question. So where is AI? It's in your refrigerator. It's in your car. It's in your, you know, your computer. It's in your watch. It's in anything that captures data, your fitness tracker. It's in literally anything that captures data. I think you're going to see AI or machine learning enabling that, and that could be in the form of software. It could be in the form of a chip, a heart, you know, a physical chip that may sit in your refrigerator that learns, you know, what your food preferences are, or learn, you know, learns when you open and close the fridge. So AI is going to be ubiquitous in every aspect of our life.
I love that one. Let's go switch and go tactical for just a minute. We talked a little bit about engagement technologies, but I want to highlight one aspect. Just get your feedback on this video. We just did a recent survey. Let me send this up. I want to get your guys' opinion on this in the chat box if you can. What percentage of people are using video in email right now? We actually asked about 1,000 companies. What percentage of sales reps are using video and email right now? What do you think? 100%, 20%, 30%, 40%. Jeff's got 9. We've got Ivor's got 4%. 5 tops. Interesting. 100%. Maybe that's a little more. You guys are actually not far from the real answer here. Right now, our data says 10.4%. So Frank, I think you nailed it right there. 10.4% of emails are using video as people begin to reach out. Video. Have we seen the end of it, or do you expect that number to jump and other numbers around video to go crazy?
So I think it's going to blow up, but I think it's going to be in a way we don't expect. So the way a lot of this video happens, and I don't look, I'd be curious, do you guys like this? But I'll get an email with somebody with a video that says,
"Interesting.
Hi, Dave, we love you." And I'm like, what? No, you don't. You just want to sell to me. Like, come on.
But it is personalized. It's like, it's different.
They took 30. I guess what?
I looked at it. What are you complaining about, man? You opened it.
But But here's the thing. I go back to those digital communities. Like, we're not going to go spend time on the golf course like we used to.
Yeah.
So this video, any way we can connect, just like this, yeah. we can connect with you in a meaningful way. You get a little bit of, you know, Gabe's personality. I apologize for that. Like, we've had therapists talk to him and it's not helping.
That's right. It's not going to change it.
Yeah, it's not going to change. But no, any way you can engage in a digital way that allows us to be more efficient with our time, I think we're going to see more of it. So I think we're seeing just the beginning of the way video is going to disrupt the way we sell, the way we engage, the way we communicate. And so it's we're at the onset of it. So I think you're going to see a lot of video innovation this year.
Yeah, I mean, how many? So Todd, you mentioned you hate video.
Yeah.
He just said he hates it. Paul's mentioning he's got 100% of his SDRs enabled to do some level of video. Do you guys feel like video, that's something you want to use? You think you need to be using it?
Well, do you respond to it? Is it valuable? When someone reaches out to you using video,
The numbers are showing that it is. I mean, the open rates, when you mention video, 36% better open rates, according to our friends at Vidyard, when you mention that this is potentially a video in that email. So I don't think video is going away. But I do like the concept of other use cases. Listen to this one, you guys. And Dave, you'll find this interesting. We just did a little analysis on our website. We found that when people hit our demo request button, only 86% of people don't actually do a demo. They don't go all the way through, right? Yep, the rest of them go to our chat bot and kind of go through.
Yep.
So we tried to analyze the data. And one of the things we found is that we have a lot of people who don't want to have a full demo. A lot of people type and just say, I want to see a quick video.
Yeah. So you're saying recorded video.
The recorded
versus
video.
Live.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Is there a way in that use case to merge the best of both worlds together so that the people who do want to see, a live person demo, they can see it. But if not, is there a way that I can see a recorded video in a structured manner? So I've got some companies who are saying, hey, go to this, watch a recorded video. After 30 seconds, it pops something that says, hey, let's go actually see, talk to a representative. Yeah, so I think there's multiple ways.
I think video is going to, we're just seeing the beginning of it. I actually want to hit a different topic.
Do
if
it,
I can.
Do it. Let's do it.
I think, and I challenge me.
Are you going to outsourcing?
I am.
Oh, is man. That we're yeah, go? This, I did want to go there.
Okay. So this is an interesting one. I think we're going to see a resurgence of outsourcing. Now it's not the outsourcing you think. In fact,
wait, hold on. How many of you are outsourcing some part of your sales team?
Okay. We'll get answers.
Because I want to, before you buy us some, is anybody actually outsourcing?
None.
Oh, look at that.
There's one.
75%. Okay. It looks like Chant.
We are an outsourcing company.
Ben Siv. Did I just see Ben on here?
I think so.
Yeah, Ben, Market Source. Man, this is a great outsource. This is a plug for you, Ben. I like those guys out of Atlanta, Market Source.
So
want my logo. No, we don't need any other pushing. I'm pushing enough here.
Yeah.
Go outsourcing.
Okay. So here's what's happening. As there's a trend, a glut of new technology.
Yeah.
And so we were talking to McKinsey a month or two ago. McKinsey shared the average number of sales technologies people deploy. In fact, before I say the answer, How many sales technologies do you deploy in your company right now? CRM, voice technology.
For sales teams.
That's for sales teams. Throw those numbers out.
5.7, 4, 8, Julian, 5, 3.
Think more broadly. This is your phone system. This is your PBX even. This is your CRM, your deduping technology.
You think it's more than that? I mean, look
McKinsey
at that.
McKinsey has 23 at a large enterprise. 23 technologies
for sales people.
For salespeople.
I haven't seen that.
So here's the problem.
23?
So let me tell you what the problem, even if it's, you know, I think
Sasha says 10 or 12. Five, you know, even I think most
five,
of these guys around.
Think about the challenge. You're managing five separate vendors, five separate contract renewals, five separate price points, five separate discounts, five separate integrations. It becomes unwieldy. So the challenge is we're all looking, and salespeople, and I'm one of them, I love tech. I love the promise of what technology can do. So when we buy a new technology, what typically happens? We get kind of excited by the promise of what it can do. We then deploy it halfway because we've got 10 other technologies or whatever, 10 other things we're trying to accomplish. And it kind of turns into SaaS shelfware, which is a new thing that I would predict we're going to see. We're seeing a lot of, I think we're going to see more of. As more technologies become available, people are buying very niche feature-based technologies. Well, without people to manage it. You think about if you're using Salesforce.com or Dynamics, you have a Salesforce admin, you have a Dynamics admin, you have someone whose job it is to manage this. Well, what about the other 5 or 12 or 23 things that McKinsey describes? If you don't have somebody to manage that, you just wasted that money because you're kind of getting some value out of it.
Yeah,
so what I believe is going to happen, and we're beginning to see it, is a lot of outsourcing and specialization around that technology. So we, for example, use an outsourcer to manage our sales bot because we just don't have the expertise or the manpower. Right. And we don't need a full-time admin to go manage one of these little features. So we're getting a fractional consultant on that. So we're going to see, I believe, a resurgence of that. I think we're going to see a resurgence around sales training and sales. Here's another interesting thing. McKinsey, BCG, Bain, Accenture, they all have sales strategy consulting groups. So this is 5 years ago.
That's true. It didn't exist for the first time. But that's more on sales transformation. I want to stick on your outsourcing.
My point is people are outsourcing their sales strategy. So they're outsourcing their technology management. They're outsourcing their sales deployment strategy, their go-to-market strategy, their territory strategy. They're outsourcing their skills. And that I don't think it's a bad thing. So the question is, what do we do then as salespeople and as a sales leader? Like, what is our core competency? And I believe it's managing people, helping people develop in their career, educating people. So as a company, as an owner, I got to create amazing product. We've got to recruit great people. We've got to motivate great people. But the specialization in specific things, we shouldn't be spending time figuring out the demographic breakdown of the territory, whatever, let's get expertise around that. And we're seeing it on a large scale right now.
Got it. So your projection is more outsourcing of
the sales supporting functions.
The supporting functions, not necessarily getting rid of your sales team, the people and handing them off to another organization to let them deal with the people and the technology and the training, et cetera.
In fact, we're seeing the opposite. We're seeing insourcing happening. So rather than pushing a lot of my sales to overseas or my support even overseas, coming either in my corporate offices, or if I'm going to find a partner, it's a partner like some of the ones you mentioned that actually set up a team that are basically employees.
Yeah.
They're my employees. They participate in my employee all hands.
Interesting.
They've got them.
All right.
So it's that kind of stuff.
I love it. Kevin's asking for the link of that study. Kevin, hit me up on LinkedIn. We'll see if we can get you that McKinsey article or piece.
Yep.
One of the things you mentioned, and we touched on it at first day, but I feel like we maybe should go a little deeper on it, is this idea of chatbots. Dave's got a little bit of a passion about that. I think you were the one who kind of got me on that train. Guys, how many of you are using a chatbot in some form or fashion?
For sales.
For sales, correct.
Because, look, chatbots have been around, and chat has been around for years. But this new application where we've arbitraged that technology and we're applying it in the sales space, it's pretty new.
No. Uh-oh.
None.
Yeah. So yeah, some people
intercom adrift.
yep. So they've talked a little bit about this. It looks like some people aren't.
Yep.
Because I feel like this idea of using bots, this goes a little bit into the AI train a little bit, because I think there's some intelligence that can happen, but right now, we're only scratching the surface on how deep potentially chatbots can go.
So think about what AI and technology should do and what it shouldn't do. So the question is it going to replace the seller? Will people no longer be involved in the sales process?
I'd
love to hear what people think. Will salespeople go away?
Have you seen my LinkedIn post on this?
No, I've not.
Oh, my goodness. So you have to check this out, you guys. I posted this thing on LinkedIn about AI not replace. My vote is AI. There will be a place for sellers. Don't get me wrong.
No, not anytime soon. Possibly someone says if you're selling a technology.
Yeah, I've got this LinkedIn debate going on. I need you to join it. I got 50,000 views on this LinkedIn post. A lot of debate about this, and I'm surprised at how many people. I think they're a little confused because I think AI will.
I hope not.
I think AI, it's going to continue to eliminate some of these mundane tasks and potentially ease some of the things, but I still see a place for the seller in the future.
I could not agree more.
Yeah.
So as people, I want to buy from a person.
Yeah.
I want to look somebody in the eye and say, take care of me. I trust you. don't mess this up.
Oh, I like Paul. Paul, good point there. Yeah.
What'd you say?
Well, he mentioned, you know, sometimes in these self-service, when you're buying widgets. You
sure.
Know,
if it's a commodity.
Yeah, we're talking. That's a good clarification.
That is a good point. I'd say the more specialized the solution, the riskier it is to buy something, the more I want to look somebody in the eye. And frankly, the more I buy it, I mean, I don't know anybody at Amazon. I don't know many people at Amazon. But I still buy it too much from Amazon. Would I like to know Jeff Bezos? Yes, I would. Actually, I'd love to go to lunch with Jeff Bezos. So, I think we always want to buy from people. Now, what I think technology and AI is going to do is it's going to remove the mundane, the redundant things. Right. Like, I want to talk to someone, but I don't. Like, here's an example. And I know there's a lot of research, so there's different numbers. But the one I've read most recently, before a buyer comes to you, they've done somewhere in the range of 17 to 18 research touch points on your organization. So they've read blogs, they've read reviews.
They've interacted with you, right? You guys heard that.
You guys know this. So why do they need a sales rep? They need two things from a sales rep. They need, actually I'd say three things. They need to fill in some of the blanks that they couldn't get online, number one. Number two, they want to see a demo of a product, a presentation of the product. They want to get a little more hands-on with the product. And three, they need a proposal. Like that is why we have salespeople. And they want a relationship. Yeah. Like that's so anything that's not that, I believe, should be enabled by technology. So now let's talk about the bots. Interesting example. Data is driving, I think, all of the way we engage, right? So think about just the rough math. There's this concept called CAC, which is a customer acquisition cost. So you look at all of your marketing costs, fixed and variable marketing costs, your campaign. You look at all your BD or your SDR costs, and then you also look at your sales costs, leadership, all of that. If you look at that total cost, and then you compare that to your annual value of a customer, that ratio is called the magic number. Now, the more technology that lowers that cost drives a higher magic number. The higher your magic number, the more efficient your sales or your go-to-market machine is. So think about just what a bot does. That middle section, that SDR section that I just mentioned, what do you pay an SDR to generate an appointment for your salespeople? Full all in, not just the commission, that all in. And those numbers are going to be anywhere on the low end from 100 and on the high end, $1,500. Yeah, yeah. That's kind of the range of what you're paying for that. That's just the variable cost. That's not your marketing. That's not your sales. That's just that appointment setting cost. So if you have a bot that is now, in our case, sourcing roughly 65% of your appointments, and we don't have to pay that $1,000 or that $500, that just saved us a massive amount of money. Now, do sales rep, and what's interesting is the bot can qualify this. So there's some basic rules engines and AI that's going to help qualify that lead. And do I, as a buyer, do I mind it? I don't mind it because I don't want to have to go spend 45 minutes talking to an SDR if I know I just want to see a demo. Or I want to talk to a sales rep. So that's the kind of thing that I think bot technology is already disrupting, I think, the sales market.
Yeah, I like that. I like this idea of using, I love the sales bot that's happening right now. I think that's a great use case. We're also starting to see some bot usage as you go further down the funnel, more internal use cases, guiding sales reps through the actual purchase process or the price configuration and quote process.
Yeah, that's right.
And supporting that so it's not like, okay, how much can I discount or where's this pricing proposal document? It's like pop up a chat and then you can kind of walk through that and nail down some of that. So guys,
before you go there,
please.
There is a bad side of bots.
Yeah.
And it's not the Elon Musk that they're going to come back from the future and go, you know, kill us all. There is junk content being killed or being created at a rampant rate. So, and Twitter knows this, right? So last, I don't know, I think it was June or July, Twitter tried to say, hey, no retweeting redundant content. And now let me tell you why that redundant content is all over the web. You've heard about, I mean, what's the fake news issue? All of this is coming from bots and engines that allow me to write, you know, 10 articles, and then it just spams it over and over over the next 12 months. Or there's even bots that are creating synthetic or bot-generated content that isn't even human-created, and it's not really very useful. That stuff is the bad side of bots. And I think we're going to see, unfortunately, a lot more of that. But the platforms, Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook,
they're fighting that kind of stuff. Interesting. Bill says, yeah, the buyer also doesn't want to be handed off two or three more times. Low friction experience, in addition to your example on lower CAC.
That's right.
So I think there is something to that as we go through that handoff. So interesting, you guys. Well, we've talked about a lot. I was going to cut you off about 15 minutes ago, but so fun.
I don't know. It's good.
So many trends. Guys, there's plenty more to discuss. We are going to send out some of the other ideas. Dave and I were brainstorming. There's a lot coming in 2019. AI, outsourcing, data, technology. Oh, I wanted to talk about technology consolidation. I think that's going to be interesting as we see different companies move from point, you know,
to a platform. Yeah. Yeah, it's going to happen.
So a lot more to talk about, but really appreciate you joining. We'll get some great material. So sorry for the beginning on that. Again, the platform, they were down for a few minutes, and I know some people were complaining, said, hey, we just can't get, we can't see the technology. So look, we'll get this out, the recording, and make sure you guys have some good stuff. Thank you so much for the conversation.
And one last ask.
Please.
Send us topics that you think. So another ask on the McKinsey study. Actually, it wasn't a study. It was a conversation I had with their managing partner.
We better find it then. We got a lot of people.
I think they have some research behind it. So I will get that to everybody. But a last request. Send us topics and trends you think are going to change the market this year. Like, what do you think is going to happen in technology, in process, and people, just in the industry in general? Again, I'm putting this Forbes article together. I'd love to highlight some of the things that you guys think are going to change the market.
Yeah. And do right now. Both Dave and I'll be offended if you don't grab us on LinkedIn. Let's continue the conversation. And we will be getting some of these studies. I'm seeing some of this stuff, some asks. We'll make sure we get to some of those and help you guys out. So have a great day and good luck in 2019. Thanks, everybody.
Want more sales secrets? Go to salessecrets.io to receive copies of our latest research and best practice content to help you crush your quota.